Clustered Conversations. Clustered Conversations.
Hey, welcome to Clustered Conversations. I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh. And today we've got a great episode for you. Our very special guest today, David Chapa. Welcome, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Yeah. It's like a beautiful day outside. It's not super hot anymore. It's nice. No longer melting. It's wonderful.
Josh and I spent the day trying to come up with crazy ideas how to build clusters on systems. It's been fun. People give us ragtag hardware and say, hey, build a cluster. And we go, all right, we'll figure it out.
Okay, yeah, it'll work and it'll be strangely fast. You'll be surprised. It's always fun. It's always fun what we come up with. So, David, tell us about yourself. Who is David Chapa?
Who is David Chapa? Well, Bob may not like this, but like Bob, I've been around this industry for a long time. I actually did the math, it's a little bit more, but it's around 30 years that I've been, playing around this industry. My focus and my job history, if you look at what I've done, has been around data protection, data security, and data storage. If you kind of double click inside of all those things, it really gets down into disaster recovery, business continuity, looking at solutions for customers that's going to allow them to get their jobs done without having as much downtime as as they used to have in the past. So that's what I've done over the years. I've worked for a variety of companies from the old ADIC days. I mean, I even go back to Cheyenne Software, which was the very first manufacturer that I worked for. I think that was the 90s, maybe mid 90s. But stayed in that vein, across the across that chasm, went from Cheyenne to OpenVision, and then from OpenVision I went into other manufacturers. I ended up working for ADIC, like I said, NetApp. I was an industry analyst for a number of years. And then I ended up here at Weka.
Nice. So quite the background from, from software to companies, to hardware companies, to industry analyzing. And what brought you to Weka? Why choose Weka as your next step?
Well, so I was running my own company for a number of years called the CTE Group, and it was a boutique analyst firm and consulting firm. So I focused on, doing what your traditional analysts do, but also working with end user customers and helping them go through their RFIs, RFPs, and write these things out, provide recommendations, etc. We all know the year 2020 happened, and we all understand if we're in sales, we understand what a funnel is. And all of a sudden, the funnel that I had, the opportunity I had, was starting to shrink. Because like dominoes, every single opportunity I had in the funnel started to go away because everyone was tightening their belt. There was a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And so I had to make a decision. Either I, close up shop, grab my guitar, go on the road and play at every place that would let me play, or jump back into technology.
And that sounds like a good idea, though.
Well, I did that for a while, too, by the way. But I decided to get back into the industry. I actually was working a very long contract for a very big big company. I won't mention them right now. And they were doing some really unique things in the SSD world and the persistent memory world. And I was really attracted to this, and I saw huge disruption and opportunity. And I wanted to get into a company that was going to be, targeting that space, almost religiously targeting that space. And so I got back into the market and landed at one company, the previous company, where I was global head of competitive intelligence. So part of that job was to research all of these main competitors. And one of them was, of course, Weka. And, the funny thing, and Bob and I have had these conversations before, but the funny thing is when people would come to me and say, how do we compete against Weka? I'm like, well, here's the deal. If you're in a deal where Weka's selling, you might be in the wrong deal. because it's really hard for you to compete against a company like that who has these IOPS that go through the ceiling, and we have IOPS that, you know, basically hold up a table. So if you're in that same deal, you probably need to reconsider whether you need to be there or not. And so when I had the opportunity to join Weka, and I work for Colin Gallagher, he and I talked, I think I started talking with him around February, March of this year. And great conversations, almost to the point where I forgot that I was actually interviewing for a job. I just really enjoyed having conversations with him.
Those are the best interviews, though.
It really was, right? And so when it came time for me to join the company, I got super excited. And I thought I knew a lot about Weka when I joined. And then I came in the doors, through those purple doors, and started to go through a lot of the content and a lot of the training. And I'm like, wow, the Weka I thought I knew is not the Weka that is. And so all of a sudden I'm like, I was right in saying don't compete with Weka, but I was totally wrong in what Weka really was capable of doing. And that's why I'm super excited. I mean, if you follow me on LinkedIn, you see all these excited posts. I mean, this is not the marketing behind it. This is the enthusiasm that's coming out of Chapa about a company that's really delivering on the things that they say they can do. And that is a unicorn, as far as I'm concerned.
That's kind of how Josh and I both felt when we first came here, because we're like, yeah, it's a cool thing. We think you can do some cool stuff. We came here, holy crap, it really does more than what I even expected it to do.
The thing that got me is the small footprint. So to be able to deliver not only performance, but the high IOPS in a small footprint was mind-blowing to me. Because, you know, you think about, okay, I'm going to deliver high IOPS. That means I got to have a breadth of compute. I've got to do a bunch of things. I got to have a bunch of SSDs. I've got to do, you know, ungodly things to get to the high IOPS. And with Weka, it's there by design, by the way that Weka operates. And that to me was, you know, it talked about, you know, disruptive technology. I was talking about that other company. That to me is really disruptive. Be able to do what you can do with things that customers can buy. That's basically industry available, industry standard hardware. That's impressive.
Yeah, I was one of my customers we were working with, and it was an IOPS play, and they gave me, I had an 8-node cluster, which is normal for us to set up, and they gave me a network connection to their network of 200 gig ports. 100 gig port. And they wanted to run 4K IOPS. And so I ran 4K IOPS to the point where I got to 2.5 million, which filled up a 100 gig port. And if you looked at the cluster was like at 40% utilization. So had they given me another port, I would still have had room to keep adding more clients. So that kind of blew them away, because that was more IOPS than they've gotten off their file server cluster they have today. They have, you know, dozens of them, and adding them all together, they can't get to 2.5 million IOPS. So you're absolutely right.
It's things like that. That's just, it's crazy. And, you know, I heard those things before I joined Weka, but, you know, me, like everybody else that hears those things, like, yeah, right, I don't believe that.
Yeah. Hero number, marketing something or another.
Hero numbers. Exactly what I heard verbatim. Yeah. Oh, those are hero numbers. No.
that's what we do.
They're not.
Yeah.
So customers that are listening, hey, these are not hero numbers. This is actual stuff that happens. And I think it's safe to say, challenge us. See if we're not telling the truth, because holy cow, it's impressive. That's all I can say.
Yeah, Bob, have we ever actually released like a really specific, like an actual, like proper actual hero number? Like all the benchmarking I've ever done that's ever ended up being communicated was me essentially just running FIO.
Yeah.
And like, hey, so this is the number I hit.
Or IO 500 on something someone gave us, right? It's we get random things and we build, like we have a A100 in our lab, right? And it's connected to 20 big twins. And that one is the one that we use whenever we want to see 165 gigabytes a second to an A100 or 2.5 million. Again, 2.5 million IOPS to a single A100, because we only give it 12 cores. But That's just, you know, we can do that any day in our lab. That's what's fun about it, right? It's not like a try hard. It's just a command line. And then at my customers, we show them all the hero numbers, but what's really the hero that gives them is I have a customer doing color correction and rendering, and they're doing it at 4 or 5 gigabytes a second from a Windows client, right? So that's a Windows client going through SMB down to our cluster, and that just blows them away. And that's more than they can do with anybody else.
I think that's the key, right? So we can go and test out at all these various labs and make a spreadsheet. You know, and be in the top five, top three. But really what the hero number is the customer. The customer's a hero, the one that's able to deliver, get to those business outcomes more quickly than they were before. That's all that really matters to a customer, right?
Oh, yeah. Josh and I talk about customers that we have and what they're running. So I talk about, hey, this customer's doing this with this color rendering. I talk about this customer's doing this with AI ML. They're doing, you know, 300 gigabytes a second every day, all day, 24 all hours time, a day.
Nonstop.
Yeah. Yep. Right. Yeah. So that's their, and they keep adding to that cluster. And then I have another one that's been running, educational and research compute against our cluster for 2 years now. Or 3 years now, and 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, two continents, and they're just happy as hell. And they got 120 DGX2s connected to it, and just go at it all day long. So it's fun. It's really fun to see the pudding.
and it's interesting to see the if you really get down to brass tacks, it's interesting to see from a competitive standpoint. The market, the field out there, what they have to bring to a POC to actually deliver on those numbers. And I think that's the thing that doesn't really get talked about a lot. You know, I talked about us having a relatively small footprint, but for those competitors, and I'm thinking of a couple of them right now, to really get to that, even not get to, but get close to us, they have to bring in a ton of hardware.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they might have a green story that they're talking about, but when you got to bring in three times as much hardware to even get close to what we can deliver, your green story goes out the door, right?
Right.
Yeah. And the fun part of the biggest, fastest clusters I've built have been for converged testing and workloads. So not even dedicated hardware, but the system that's running Wake is also the system that's running your apps.
Wow.
Yeah. So Josh has done some fun stuff. I mean, he's kind of like, as much as I get to tinker, Josh gets to tinker with some cool stuff as well. So we see the neatest configurations. We see the craziest configurations and try to build it. Actually, I wanted to ask you a couple questions. So we're just kind of talking about the market in general and some of the competition out there, but even if we don't discuss that, it's, how do you see the market? I mean, where does Weka fit as far as the world's concerned versus where don't we fit, or, you know, maybe what is the best way and the easiest fit?
Well, I think the way I see the market right now, obviously cloud is gaining adoption. I think, Bob, you and I were at the same company back in 2008 when we started to educate the market on what cloud was, right? So platform as a service, software as a service, infrastructure as a service, really educating the market on what that looks like. You know, and to be quite candid with you, I really believe the adoption of cloud took a lot longer than I think all of us thought it would take. Now, I hate to say this, but there may be a silver lining in 2020 in that we had to learn. So everyone was on this digital transformation journey. When 2020 hit and the world shut down, that journey turned to a sprint overnight. And we had to figure out how to make this work and how to make this happen. And I think what organizations realize is, hey, number one, we can leverage the cloud for certain workloads and workflows that we're doing. We can potentially reduce our carbon footprint in our data centers across the globe and really take advantage of the artifacts of cloud and what it offers us. I think the other thing that we learned is that there's a lot more opportunity for us between on-premises and the cloud and that hybrid model. So when I look at the market today, what I'm seeing customers really getting their arms around is, okay, well, what workload, what application, whatever you want to call it, is going to be best suited for on-premises? Where before the question was, which workload or application can we put to the cloud? So it's been flipped around, right? So, you know, do we have a homegrown application that can't go to the cloud? Give me a good reason why we can't do it. Okay, we'll have it here. So the best thing about Weka, number one, is, and I always thought that Weka was first designed for hardware solutions. So I was always of the mindset that Weka was bound by a proprietary hardware, you know, configuration, architecture, et cetera. I was terribly wrong. Weka was designed with cloud in mind. Weka was designed so that was not going to be tied down to a hardware platform. It was going to be, you know, as close to being ubiquitous as possible. And so that's the best thing that I see about Weka is that flexibility for a customer to move from on-premises to a cloud and get that same kind of feature function experience. Where Weka fits, I see Weka fitting really well is in those really demand, I call them demanding operations. We're calling them internally next generation workloads. Whatever the customer is faced with that they can't get done with your traditional older style file system storage, that's where they should start looking at Weka. You know, we talked about the high IOPS. We talked about all those things that you can get done with Weka. That's what they should be looking at. So, give you a visual. I know this is a podcast. People can't really see me kind of using my hands.
But I can see you using your hands.
You can see me. But I look at Weka as, look, you got those mountaintop experiences that you've got to take care of. And what you're using today, what you've used in the past, have been okay. They've worked, but they've been brittle. Because as you scaled up and as you added more and more and more, these mountaintop solutions started to really crumble. And Weka is not one of those solutions. Weka can actually scale across multiple mountaintops and deliver on those expectations from the customers. That is the good news. That's where Weka really shines. And now the other part that I see where Weka shines is as you go down that mountain, so you got these high-performance compute, AI or artificial intelligence, machine learning workloads at the mountaintop. And as you come down, you've got maybe some fintech stuff. You've got some imaging, medical imaging, and then you've got general IT file. All of a sudden, as the customers are solving their mountaintop experiences with Weka, they start to realize, like you were saying, Josh, hey, there's a lot more power here. I mean, I can push this accelerator down even more. Let's go down a little further. Let's get some of those mid-tier ones. What about general file IT? Let's get down. Can we reduce the number of silos we have in our environment and just use Weka's simplicity, scale, and performance solution that we have? That's what I think is a triple threat to everybody else is that scale, simplicity, and speed.
Yeah, so I have a number of customers.
What's that?
Yeah, so we have a number of customers that start off with the high performance, right? They came in AI ML, they came in scientific compute, they came in just crazy, you know, high performance, nothing else can work for it. And then like about a month later, they're like, can we put our home directories on here?
So, they're like, exactly.
Can we run a couple of VMs on there? Sure. but you know, it we don't have that noisy neighbor problem either, which is a big differentiator for us, right? That was one of the things that I ran into at our previous company, right?
Yeah. Good point. And that's the other thing too. Again, before I joined Weka, I heard the marketing message change and that tagline, we make the impossible possible. Man, I hated that when I was on the other side. And now when I'm here and I, like I said, I see this, I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's the reality. That's the reality. Yeah. Taking those impossible things that you thought you couldn't get done and achieving those things. I think the other thing too, that we're realizing that we or customers are realizing, you know, those workloads, those next generation workloads. And I start looking at it, you know, kind of, I peel the onion back a little bit, start looking at the workflow. And, you know, there's that workload, which is the big conglomeration. Then there's that workflow. That workflow is comprised of a number of different data pipelines. Those pipelines are sometimes they're sequential, right? and sometimes they're in parallel, but they feed one another so you can get to the outcome, the desired result. And customers with a traditional, I hate using the word legacy, I'll just say old, storage solution, they're not going to be able to achieve those outcomes as quickly as they would like, because that data pipeline can't be processed through that old tier as quickly as it can on a data platform like Weka. And that's the other thing that's differentiated with Weka, is Weka really looks at the information you're processing holistically. So Weka is a data platform, and it helps customers to get to that outcome much more quickly than they could with those older systems they have in-house.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to step off the soapbox for a minute and let you guys talk.
No, actually, no. So what you're saying there, like the data platform aspect of it and how we're enabling, you know, significantly faster time to, you know, a workflow finishing sort of thing. And not just thinking of us as like a storage device or storage appliance or one, you know, factor in a long winding workflow that has, you know, an innumerable steps sort of thing. That actually kind of made it click for me a bit as to how we are actually a data platform. Because you think about like why in the past and like most normal sort of workflows, you have your dedicated specialized storage for every step that you thought was like, this is the challenging step. This is the one where I need to have the special specific thing that does exactly the right whatever. And because we're just so fast, is maybe just the most succinct way I can say it, there's just so much overhead and available performance to your workloads, and not just from a pure horsepower or throughput level, but, you know, being able to do the high throughput for your data ingest, your data movement, your moving things around, your large sequential jobs of I'm reading this into my GPU memory or into my huge memory buffer on my system, but then also being able to do the very small iterative steps. Okay, now I'm doing a bunch of checkpointing. Now I'm doing a bunch of very small reads, or now I'm validating that what I was reading on the metadata is accurate and correct, and I'm checking for any changes on stuff so I can update whatever I'm doing. We don't have to move anything around. There's no reason to move anything around because we're fast in all of those aspects and areas. So why would you bottleneck yourself in having, you know, a general storage that lives somewhere, then a specialized storage that's maybe a bit faster than one aspect that you then move data to so that your compute cluster reads from and then copies locally because my local NVMe is faster than everything, right? And then have a bunch of different copies and disparate data everywhere that you have to reconsolidate back up, et cetera, right, et cetera. With Weka as a data platform in that aspect, in that sort of thought cycle, it just works.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was the other thing. You know, we talk about zero copy. And again, that sounds like a marketing buzzword, right? Buzz term. But that's the reality. You explained that in what you just said. We don't have to make copies of data and move it around between tiers of storage. And the most important thing is we don't have to profile the data and have that profile of data be on a certain tier of storage because that happens to be faster for that certain profile. We handle the profiles. Whatever profile you want to throw it at Weka, we can handle that. And we can handle that at scale. We can handle that at a performance tier that's going to deliver. And that's what a data platform is. And that's why looking at data pipelines and really what you're going to be, you know, outcoming is really, really important when considering, you know, what do I need to replace these two or three different old storage tiers so that I can actually get my job done more quickly. Media and entertainment, they're, believe it or not, their workflow is very, very similar to what you see with, scientific analysis.
And
you're going to be ingesting a ton of data. Right.
True.
And that ton of data is going to be processed through another sequencer. And then that sequencer is going to send that back and you're going to process it again. That's the same thing. When you think about dumping from a flash drive from a camera, you got dailies you're dumping. You need that. You want to go to post-production. Post-production then goes, that's the same kind of workflow. That's what I was talking about. The workflows start to look very similar where the workloads or the applications driving them are different.
But if you look at it,
like color correction and stuff, right?
So we were talking about Yeah, the speeds and the feeds and all that stuff. We talked about a lot about that, but there's also the breadth and the depth of what we can do. So like we have a customer who's genomics in England, right? They have, what is it now, 60 petabytes, 70 petabytes in a single cluster being, it keeps growing. It was 40 a few months ago, but they have like a, I think it was 5 or 6 petabytes of flash, but the rest of it is all object store. And so now they can store on Weka cheaper than they could before on the previous configuration, which was being held together by twine and tape because it was falling apart. but now they can have hundreds of researchers access the data and be able to keep more data and at a cheaper cost per genome than they were before. So it's not just performance, but it's also value. And it's also just huge amounts of storage. I mean, Josh and I have, you know, Josh did a cluster that was 2 terabytes a second, right? And for fun, we make clusters at 14 exabytes because we can do that. So, right?
Air quotes, 14 exabytes. Yeah.
It presents 14 exabytes.
It presents, it says it is. Yeah. It would consume but, that much if you could feed it that much.
That's years the magic ago, of the cloud. Years ago, I worked with the Ormond Street Children's Hospital in London. And one of the things that they, this is going back into 2015, I think it was. One of the things that they said was, our plan, our strategy, and this is working with Genomics England, I believe, as well, is we want to have the genomes for every child that comes through here so that at some point in time, we'll be able to have research and analysis on diseases, on abnormalities, you know, anomalies. And what they were doing is they were taking the genome of the children who were sick and they were anonymizing that data and they were sending it off to the States. I think it was to Harvard Medical to do some analysis. And they would give a bunch of data, including room temperature, patient temperature, all that stuff, so that they could send back recommendations and solutions. And this would take a long, long time to do this. Why? Because they were having to go through multiple tiers of storage based on the analyses of the data and based on the profile of that data that fit the right storage tier. But, you know, gosh, fast forward now, we're 7 years later, and it's good to hear that they're using that, you know, Genomics England is using Weka to be able to process this stuff so much more quickly.
Yep. Yeah, and they have now almost every genome from everyone's visit NIH that's given it up, right? They have a huge database full of anonymized genomes that they can use for research now, which is fantastic for medicine. That's another one of our customers. They're fairly public. 23andMe also taking that and using it for research as well, right? They're doing it not only giving you back your ancestry, but they're also going and being able to look at medical research and everything else by anonymizing that data and being able to use it for discovery and research purposes. Yeah,
actually, I mean, one of the last companies I was working at, that was one of the big push that they were going for was personalized healthcare and having, you know, the genomic sequencing and having all their expertise in that area on that specific kind of research was exactly what they were banking on and moving towards. And that was, you know, the entire engineering and research org was moving and pivoting that direction.
You know, we live in a point and click society. We are so used to getting information back by clicking on a link or, you know, just going to our favorite search engine. And I think that, you know, we have gotten to the point, even from the technology perspective, where customers, not knowing what's behind the wall, are feeling like they should have the information more quickly. And I think that's what Weka is really able to deliver, is like with 23andMe, you think about that. I am a typical end user. I'm going to send my stuff back there. I want to get those results as quickly as possible. And so when you're using a data platform like Weka, that can accelerate those results much more quickly than before.
Well, what's even more important is if you're a researcher with a new virus that's appeared out of nowhere and you want to be able to break down the genome very quickly and get to a you know, something, that's a nice thing to have. I mean,
that might be important too.
Yeah, right now with the cancer research that's being funded by the U.S., I mean, we're going to be able to find something there as well, right? It's a lot of genomes. It's a lot of different crystalline entities that we're going to be looking at, right? We take the cells and we take the molecules and we keep spinning around until we find something interesting.
Right.
So just want to talk to Cloud real quick. So a couple of those guys that we're talking about, right? We got a bunch of what's it called, media entertainment companies that are cloud only or cloud native that we've been working with at Weka, and the genomics companies are moving their data in the cloud. We're even talking to, we've got a couple of EDA companies that are running in the cloud as well. So it's very interesting to see that move. And I want to actually say that that company that we worked at 2008, right? They saw the cloud as something emerging, but they focused on enterprise, and there were companies that they never saw because those companies were already in the cloud or been born in the cloud and never talked to them. And those are the guys that Weka has discovered, right? We're talking to a lot of companies that I didn't know existed, never heard of them before. And I mean, I've been working on the West Coast doing sales for a long time, but I've never seen these guys or never heard of them, but they're large companies that are cloud native. And it's kind of, and they're really happy to see that there's finally a storage platform that can live where they live and give them the performance that they can't ever get out of anything in the cloud.
Yeah. And even the one you mentioned before, 23andMe, that's all on AWS, isn't it?
Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
So Josh has done a lot of work in OCI, and then Alex is another one of our good OCI buddies. He's been a lot of work in Google, and we got the other one, the blue one, coming along soon. So
that's right. Yeah. The blue one's coming along soon. Yeah. You know, and that's what's so interesting. You know, back in the day, you know, you would look at organizations that are, you know, they got, oh, I'm not going to go and call on this company, it's only 30 people. Well, yeah, that 30 person organization happened to be a law firm. The amount of data that law firm manages was just phenomenal. And if you think about what that looked like back then, and now you're looking at, like you mentioned, Bob, these companies that we never heard of, they might be small companies, maybe under 100 people, but there's petabytes and petabytes and petabytes of data that they have generated because their customer base is global because of the cloud.
Well, there's two types of companies that I ran into I never believed, could have imagined how much data they had and how small that data footprint pieces were, is title companies and insurance companies. Because they have to have a digital copy of the paper with a signature on it of every single thing they do. It was fascinating that the one of the insurance companies had a nightly job that would take the directory of files that they created that day and zip it, because they couldn't access their file system if they didn't zip it the night before. It was nuts.
Wow. My mom was in insurance for as long as I remember, since I was 4 years old. And I remember going to her office in the 70s and seeing these rooms that just were dedicated to paper files. And there were these filing cabinets were so cool because it was an entire room, but you pulled up a wall and a wall would come out, and there's all these. I'm like, holy cow. I go, Mom, why do you need all these files? And she says, well, in the insurance industry, you need to have, and she went through the whole thing, what you have to retain. And that's still true today. So, it's not that they're antiquated. It's just law and it's governance. Hello.
I think that's an interesting play that we should take a look at. Those customers would be interesting to talk to, since simply they have billions and billions and billions of files. And I don't think there's another file system on the planet that can access files or work with them as well as we can.
That's true. That's true. Especially that scale.
What's the number, Josh? How many files per file system?
6.4 trillion.
There you go. Welcome to Weka.
I haven't heard that one yet. I think I've heard lots, but not trillion. That's awesome.
Effectively, it's the same thing. Yeah. How many files do you get? Lots.
Yeah.
Oh, you need more than that? Second file system. It's fine.
Right, exactly. If you need more than that, we got to talk.
Yeah. Please let us know if you need more than that. We're more than happy to make it more than that.
Absolutely.
So I guess we'll open the floor to you. Is there anything you want to ask us or anything you want to discuss that's on your mind?
Well, you guys have been here. Play a song? You know, it's so funny.
That's fine.
The only guitars I have hang on the wall over here, I have three guitars. Usually I have about nine guitars in the studio. But I'm about ready to move down my brand new studio console desk. And so this whole room was cleared out over the weekend. So there's no music happening in this office studio until next week.
Well, send us a picture of your console desk.
Perfect time to ask that.
Yes. Send us a picture of the desk when you get it set up. I want to see this because, my setup is a USB port, right? I'd like to have a little more fancy, but with XLR.
I'll send it to you. I got a 48-inch monitor that's going to go dead center. I've got these two 27 inches that'll go on either side. And I had to change to LED floods in here because I knew the warmth level would go up exponentially once I moved everything down here. My whole town kind of dims when I turn everything on.
My two 27-inch monitors, basically light my face all day long. So it's it gets warm in here with just those two.
Exactly. It's happening right now. But so question for you guys. So you've been here longer than me. Kind of give me some of your aha moments that you've gone through when you joined Weka. And then I know that there's going to be continuing aha moments for me throughout my career here. But tell me about some of those times that, after you've kind of been here for a while, you're like, oh, wow, I didn't know that.
So for me, it was a big change that happened between, I think it was 3.5 and 3.6 of our software, right? They went from a single hop, a multi-hop read to a single hop read, which made a huge difference in our performance. I had a customer that we could only get on a 10-node cluster to 60 gigabytes a second. Changed that one thing and upgraded their software, and all of a sudden they were getting 100 gigabytes a second on the exact same hardware. I was like, wow, they really can do a lot in software. And it was truly the aggregate performance of what the cluster could give, right? It wasn't some random number that we're pulling out of our butts, right? It wasn't something that we're making up. We didn't have a huge amount of overhead. We've got our performance guy who does tests, and we can basically give 80%, almost 90% of the performance of the slowest component on a box. So if the slowest component is the network, that's going to be our limitation, wow, right? So that's a pretty efficient piece of software, and that kind of blew me away. And then I think the next one was when I learned about multi-containers and the ratio of drive cores to compute cores and how I could play with IOPS. So I can actually make the system on the same footprint deliver almost twice as many IOPS by playing with the number of cores I allocate to compute, just kind of blew me away. Again, same footprint, nothing changed, just a little different configuration, and I can get a lot more throughput on the box. So it's wild. It does what it says it's going to do, and it does it better than I can imagine. And Josh, you've had some wild ones.
That is kind of the wild thing about it. And like my favorite thing, and I know we've talked about it a handful of times here on the podcast already, but that OCI cluster of like that number I produced, or that number that the cluster produced, that 2 terabyte per second read, 1 terabyte per second write, that was after I had been trying to run IO500 on that thing for a couple of weeks. And IO500 is, it's a challenging benchmark to get right, to really get deployed in there, to get everything just so. It's a little persnickety.
Understand the MPI.
Yeah, and it was the first time I had ever run IO500 before. I mean, I was, Alex was helping me and all that sort of thing. Bob, you're helping me as well, getting everything up and running. And it was just like, why are we not seeing the number that I'm expecting to see from IO500? Let me just run our normal FIO tests. What would be, you would consider like your four corners smoke test. Like, we're not trying to do anything too crazy. We're just running our standard out of the box benchmarks. And that's where that 2 terabyte came from. It's like, oh, well, I guess it's running okay. And this is only, granted it was 373 systems. Each of them was connected to a single 100 gig port, but all of those systems only had a single NVMe.
Right.
So if you think about it from a matter of 2 terabyte per second from 373 NVMe disks or NVMe drives, it's not bad. Wow. It's not bad at all. Like each one of those is doing like 6 gigabyte per second.
We were just working with a partner who had gave us like whatever hardware he had sitting around to run IO500 on. And we did it was a very small cluster. Was it 5 nodes or 6 nodes? It was a 6-node cluster, right?
It was
right?
6 nodes, yeah.
Yeah, so it's even like, our bare minimum that we can go to market with, right? And then they gave us 10 clients, and we just play with it a little bit, and we are now, if he wants to publish it, we'd be 10th place on the IO500 10-node challenge.
And that's the really fun thing about the 10-node challenge is that the idea is that you're limiting yourself on the compute. You only can do 10 nodes. That's it. How much backend storage you throw at it is not really tracked or monitored. I think the intent is that this is supposed to be a small environment. You're supposed to be like cost effective and et cetera, et cetera. We weren't even one-to-one server, like backend servers to clients. And it still could be, if he chooses to upload that number 10 on the list with oversubscribed clients to backends.
Yeah.
Like, so a lot of those other ones, it'll be, you know, $1 million plus worth of backend hardware to satisfy 10 clients and produce, you know, an amazing looking number. But here we are with, you know, six of them. And hey, it's not bad.
I think the bomb on that would be about 250K, maybe 300K.
Oh my God. Maybe at list. Yeah. Something like that.
So yeah, it's just wild. Those are the ahas, right? We can basically eke out whatever we really want, as long as, you know, so we have the time to play with it a little bit, right? It's not like there's not a lot of knobs to twist, right? The only knobs we have to twist is the cores that we allocate and the way we lay things out. That's it. So if I get 8 nodes with 28 cores and I have 8 drives, I have a pretty good idea of how I'm going to lay everything out, right? And then if I get a couple of clients and I can go, all right, well, how much throughput do you want to this client? Let's give you 1 core. Is that enough? No, you want another one? Let's add another
2 cores.
And what the nice thing is, we're honest about how much resources we take on a client compared to, you know, the NFS where we've worked with for years. NFS doesn't tell you how much resources it's taking. It'll take whatever it wants. And it often takes more than 2, 3, 4 cores to even achieve less performance than what we're getting. And we say, we are limited to 2. We're going to take 2 gigs of memory, and that's it. That's all we need on your system to be able to give you that kind of performance. So that's a nice.
Yeah, perhaps that's my ahas. Yeah, maybe my biggest aha is, it's kind of what Bob's alluding to here, is that we can, even in a non-optimal server setup where things are kind of, that's a little weird, that's not optimal, that's whatever. We'll take that. We'll produce a really surprising result from that cluster. And maybe a, you know, good succinct way of saying it is to like kind of draw it back to a, you know, kind of saying you have in brewing, like, you know, try something out. What's the worst that can happen? You've made a beer. Oh no.
Yeah.
It's like same thing with you know, supported hardware we have. Like, throw it together. See what's the worst that's going to happen. You're going to have a pretty fast little file system right there. Is it optimized? Is it the Ferrari and sleek and perfect and exactly done, and it's going to go out on the F1 track and be amazing? Well, you know, maybe not, but it's still going to be fast.
You know, we actually are our hardest critics. So sometimes we get something that's feeling like 80 gigabytes a second. We're like, I know this could do 95.
It's like, come on.
No, we can't.
Come on.
Too true. So in fact, I had that yesterday. I was running Weka Tester, and I think the network was not perfect. And so Weka Tester was giving me one answer. And then I just went ahead and did it all by hand. And we actually ended up getting the number we expected to see on the system. So I was like, oh, thank God. So I was like, is something broken? Is the network busted? Did I mess up something? But no, it's just the Weka Tester was having trouble. So
cool.
There all right. Go. Well, we've had a great conversation. It's been 40 some odd minutes. So, you know, this is one of our longer conversations. Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely. Hey,
anytime. Thank you.
Cluster conversations. I'm Josh.
And I'm Bob. Thanks for coming. Take care.
Talk to you next time.